This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is a special edition iFanboy podcast on Daredevil.
When I left my home and my family, I was no more than a boy in the company of strangers. In the quiet of the railway station, let them scare. Laying low, seeking out the poorer quarters where the ragged people go, looking for the places only they would know.
Hello, welcome to a special edition iFanboy podcast on Daredevil. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
Yo.
And joining us is also former iFanboy columnist Mike Romo.
Hey, guys.
And we're here to talk about Netflix's Daredevil series. That's the first series from the Netflix Marvel Studios partnership that's going to result in 5 series. And we're, you know, as the Netflix model goes, all 13 episodes came out at once. And this is the grim and gritty take on the Marvel Studios universe, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, I guess it's called. It takes place in the world of Avengers. It's referenced a few times, but it's in a decidedly darker side of the happy Marvel coin. And we're going to talk about it now that these guys have finally finished watching it.
Easy, Chief. It's hard to... I can't do more than 3 in a row. It gives me nightmares, and then I can't feel my legs.
A 13-hour movie came out, and it was like, you done yet? Like,
you done yet? Yeah. You done yet? Sorry.
Shit going on.
This whole binge thing, man.
Well, I want to talk about that later. I'm going to table that.
All right, well, let's table the binge thing. Let's get into the series itself. There'll be spoilers if you haven't watched the show. Obviously, you might get spoiled if you listen from here on out. If you haven't heard it yet, pause the show and come back. So one of the things that I kept thinking of was, man, how bad do you feel if you were involved in that Daredevil movie after having watched this?
You're drinking.
I don't think you're going to feel any worse than you had previously felt.
That's true.
I feel like, I mean, maybe you got a little bit of a bump when people were like, well, that director's edition was, and it wasn't.
No.
But that helped people. That helped fans and the producers get by, I think, for a bit. And, you know, the other thing is Ben Affleck turned out okay.
True.
Right. Until recently.
So this was starring Charlie Cox as Matt Murdock, Deborah Ann Woll as Karen Page, Eldon Henson as Foggy Nelson, and Vincent D'Onofrio as Wilson Fisk. Those are the main cast members. Before we get into the series, I was really impressed by Charlie Cox.
Well, I think even farther stepping back, I mean, you know, he sort of embodies this platform for storytelling. I was listening to Scott Johnson over at The Instance, and what he was really excited about this was we finally get to see a darker Marvel universe done fully, thoughtfully, and without hesitation, reservation. And Cox is kind of he sort of embodies this Marvel's new ability to really do something very different than what we've seen in the movies where, yeah, it's been serious, but some of it's been kind of tongue-in-cheek, and it's, you know, there's always been a special effect just waiting around the corner. And I think Charlie puts on the mantle of Daredevil and the responsibility of setting up this entirely new stage, which, you know, of course, it's your guys' old backyard. Having Hell's Kitchen really, you know, obviously – Connor, as we've talked, not really sure that Bat Hell's Kitchen is truly there anymore. But
no, but there was a great Thai place on 45th and 9th. Oh, sorry.
Well, there was 6 years ago. You don't know if it's still there anymore.
Okay. Is anything still there anymore?
It's a bank now.
It's a Chase.
Yeah.
But Cox is amazing. It's so funny. I love Daredevil. The Maliv Bendis series was really one of the first books when I got back into comics in 99 or 98 or whenever that was. And I just remember, wow, this is what a comic book could be, and now what it should be, at least. And it did get super dark, but it was funny watching Cox speak as Daredevil and then as Murdoch and going, okay, well, it's not the exact voice in my head, but if that's my biggest complaint, that's pretty good, because he looked the part. I thought he did great.
You didn't think you weren't picturing that he had a barely contained Irish accent? just trying not to burst. He did okay, but I hear
he's
it
actually
once
from
in a while.
London, actually.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. He was Irish from Boardwalk Empire.
I thought I sort of got that he was always kind of holding stuff in.
Works. That's a very actorly thing to say, Mike.
Well, one of the things interesting about this is that, the recent trend for Daredevil has been sort of happy, light, fun Daredevil. So this was at the beginning part somewhat jarring, but this is basically but it went away very quickly. This is basically a filmic version of the Bendis Maliv story. I mean, it's not the beats aren't there, but it's the tone and the character. I mean, even the down to the glasses that Charlie Cox wore, which look exactly like the ones that Maliv drew on Daredevil.
I hate those glasses. Only thing the whole time I was looking at him, I was like, I don't like them. But I guess you could give him the excuse that he's blind. He doesn't know he looks dumb.
I thought he looked great.
Yeah,
it looked like the comic book. I'll give you that. But in real life, I thought they just didn't look contemporary. They looked out of place. It looked like a prop.
That's interesting. I just had no idea how iconic that look was. Like whenever, there were a lot of shots. If you have a glare anywhere near your TV, you're going to have a problem watching this show. You have to watch it at night. This thing is dark. And a lot of the way this was shot, and I guess we can get into it later, but the way the glasses would catch the light really reminded me of different covers and different panels from the comic book. So I really didn't have a problem.
Also, the way he tilted his head.
That's right.
It was
classic Murdoch tilt. Mm-hmm. But I thought the look and feel of it, especially with his costumes and all that, I thought that stuff didn't. I wasn't distracted at all.
So what's interesting is this is very much an origin story, not just of Daredevil and Matt Murdock, but also of Wilson Fisk, the Kingpin. He's never called Kingpin. Doesn't need to be called Kingpin. But he's not where he is in the beginning. He's not the Kingpin in the beginning of the story. He's one of a group of crime lords, and then by the end, he's the Kingpin. So this is a dual origin story, and the Wilson Fisk origin takes a lot from what Jason Aaron wrote in his brief Kingpin story. So there's a lot of mixes going on here. I thought, as we've seen in most of these Marvel projects, they handled it all very well.
Yeah, there's a lot of characters, but everybody was able. They were all able to breathe, and of course, this is the nice, relaxed format of having those 13
hours.
Yeah, I guess let's talk about. I can never say Vince's last name.
D'Onofrio.
Man, it was really interesting. At times, I got beleaguered of his constantly kind of struggling to sort of figure out where his righteousness, right? And he always seemed like this sort of sad. His sadness sort of permeated everything, and sometimes that was distracting. But overall, I thought the power that he had was really haunting.
Well, let's. I mean, the whole time I would look at him. From the neck up, especially, because he's not actually gigantic. And to me, like, the Kingpin is always, he's like planet sized. Like, he's a giant person.
Although Vincent Offrey is a big man.
He totally is. Yeah. And it works in real life. It's not like a thing. It's like the X-Men costumes where you're like, I don't see them in leather. But then you go, well, in real life, that's what they're going to look like. That's right. Fine. But my point is, from the neck up, like, he literally looks like the cartoon.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, I kept going, God, he looks exactly like Frank Miller's drawing of the Kingpin. Like his head and face. I kept seeing it. And that kept going over my head over and over again. I thought that was really, cool. Like, and I don't think of him as, and even like when you watch the pictures of the press stuff and everything, and there's been all these shots of like Daredevil artists like taking pictures with them at Comic Cons. And I'm like, he just looks like the Kingpin, which I would have never ever thought before. And I saw that there are people, because I watched this sort of after the fact a little bit, like Mike, I think, not at the same time that everybody with absolutely nothing to do watched it in the first day. but I saw like that was a thing that people were complaining about, and I thought that's so odd because I don't know. It felt I don't know that it has to be true to form, but it felt right.
You mean
I suppose.
His size.
No, not his size. Like his character, the sadness thing that Mike is talking about, and I think I don't even know that it's sadness. He was just. I don't know.
There's a sort of reluctant to do what needs to be done. And then that's something that sort of struck me with both of these guys. These guys are doing, whether it's right or wrong, they feel like they are doing what they are doing for their community, for Hell's Kitchen, for the city of New York. They are doing what needs to be done, and they're doing it from totally different angles. And they realize that people are going to get hurt. And they actually, they do feel bad about the pain that they're causing. And, this comes to a different realization toward the end of the series, but throughout it all, it's like people are going to hurt, but this kind of pain is necessary if we're going to move on. And I thought that was very, very powerful. It really drove both of those characters in a way that really resonated with me.
He's sort of the classic mobster character, right? I mean, these aren't they don't tend to be mustache twirlers. They are
That was Michael Clark Duncan.
Yeah,
in the other movie, he was a mustache twirler. So you don't do that, then what are you going to get? I mean, he's a thoughtful villain who doesn't think he's a villain,
right?
Which is, it's a little further to the the left of where
he. But that might have been him lying
Tony
to himself
Soprano.
Because he clearly was doing villainous things and was. I mean, what was interesting was being ahead of you guys, and I mean, this is a really bloody show. I mean, those.
Sure.
Well, I think the Variety review, the Hollywood Reporter review, called it a blood porn. But it wasn't really until he smashed that guy's head in with the door that really you got. I think the true kingpin came out. I think
that's
in the beginning it was sort of, well, this guy's not so bad, and then okay, no, he's bad.
And
that's
that took time to get there, and I think that that you have the Vanessa character, which I think is interesting as a counterpoint to that, and it's interesting in this.
His wife or his
yeah
wife.
Yeah,
she's a great character.
And in the comics, she didn't know who he was, or that's the story. But in this, at least at the Frank Miller time, and I'm not a super Daredevil expert, but I've read all that stuff. He was trying to keep the crime stuff away from her. But in this, they made the choice that she knows it and actually kind of eggs him on
and likes it.
And likes it, gets turned on by it. And I think that that's interesting. I think that I don't think there's anything wrong with that in taking that sort of creative license.
And it works for Kingpin because
yes.
in her he saw goodness, right? He was a different man around her when they have dinner and everything. But then the more she eggs him on, the more his sort of dark path he goes down.
And well, he feels supported.
Okay. Yeah.
He feels supported, and if his actions are validated by this woman that he's falling in love with, that he gives him power, and then you see the glint in her eyes, like, okay, so this is not what I expected, but I kind of like it. I think that's a really good observation.
It's interesting talking about this now, realizing how difficult it is to talk about a 13-hour show.
Yes.
Because
I've been thinking about that the whole time.
There's about five different... I mean, this is a 13-hour movie with, 15 plot lines. And let's just talk about some of the stories. Because the story is basically the Kingpin's trying to take over Hell's Kitchen and Daredevil. Matt Murdock emerges to stop him, and slowly but surely... becomes Daredevil.
Yeah, the crime syndicate is trying to take over several city blocks in Hell's Kitchen for development, and they're
real estate crime.
There was a trade.
Listen, if Lex Luthor taught us nothing,
I know
is it's
real
all
estate.
About land. They're not making any more of it. So
Fisberg.
Let's talk about some of our favorite episodes then. It might be an easier way to get into the storyline.
It's almost hard to say favorite when so much of it seems to hang their hat on shocking.
I think Stick stands out as one of the stronger episodes.
That was the best one.
Terrific.
That was the best one, and I think the last couple as they got towards the end when you got confrontations between – but that all matters because of the time it took to get there.
And I think one of the things that is really – that I thought of while watching this, and it's the benefit of a Netflix show, is that you have some really long scenes in these episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them are really long conversations. I'm thinking of the Stick episode where he and young Matt are sitting on a bench and he's explaining the world to Matt. And that's a long, long scene of just two people talking on a park bench. And there's even the scene later on with Kingpin and Ben Urich in his apartment. That's a super long tense, super awesome conversation scene. And you don't really, can't get those in a network show. You don't have the time. Literally don't have the time for it.
You wouldn't see that on TV and you wouldn't see that in movies.
Right.
I guess what's sort of exciting about this is that you are seeing a different kind of storytelling happen because of these streaming services.
Storytelling.
Yeah.
It's what it is. I mean, I wanted to just mention that I think that Steck episode was the strongest because it stood on its own and it stood out from being in the middle of this long thing. Like, you sort of spent some time in this part of the reality, which was sort of nice, especially after just hours of punching.
It was almost like a backstory in a comic, you know, an extra feature.
And then you spent a lot of time with Ben Urich and Karen.
Right.
Right.
Completely outside. And then there was a whole storyline of Foggy and Matt's relationship, which kept sort of gaining momentum and time, and it would take up a lot of time, you know, as they were healing and breaking away and all that stuff. And that stuff, that was really interesting. It's really closer to it like a long form comic book story, like Frank Miller's original run or Bendis's run, or like a novel almost.
Yeah, it really is amazing how much that extra time matters.
Well, I mean, that's the thing that we're not used to with these movie adaptations. Basically, those are sucking out all of the things and all the things that really build up something and then making it into something smaller.
They have to do their best in 2.5 hours.
Sure,
whereas
and they do
13 hours to really delve into. I mean, you spent more time with Daredevil than you spent with any Marvel movie character.
That's exactly twice as long as you have with an Iron Man, just for example.
And it was interesting. I saw a lot of people making jokes about how, like, take notice, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. producers, this is how you should make your show. They can't make their show like this.
No.
It's impossible. They're hamstrung.
Remember, TV shows have to end every couple of minutes with a mini cliffhanger to make you stay through the commercials, right?
And,
so the format is totally different.
And what's wrong with having different types of things?
Nothing at
all. Totally.
That's the thing that is bothering. People are like, finally a dark comic book show. Meanwhile, at the same time, they're, I don't like these dark DC movies. And it's like, not everything is the same thing. And that is a beautiful, wonderful thing.
That's right.
It would be awful if they were. And some things, you know, Daredevil is, that's what Daredevil is, really.
Did you guys find Leland Owsley as amusing as I did? He was
kind of more so as time went on.
Right,
after
exactly.
I realized
because
who
in every
he was.
Scene he just complained.
Which one? Yeah. The older guy?
He was the old man, accountant, who was also the owl in the comics.
I was like, his hair's not right.
But he was just, every time he showed up, he'd go,
this again.
he was great. So let's get back to the Steck episode really quickly for a second. I loved how sort of. Scott Glenn's performance was amazing, but I just love how sort of dismissive he was. He wasn't like the classic father figure. He was like, I'm going to smack you around because that's what life's going to do. Not in a beating your child way, but in a, I'm going to have to train you and this is going to be difficult way.
He was nicer than the comic book Steck,
yes,
I think.
By far.
So you got that going for him. But still, that was kind of fun.
I liked. I loved how his apartment stayed bashed up, by the way. Just complete parenthetical. It's like nobody ever bothered to clean it up the rest of the episode. But I go, keep going.
Steck also was the first time we really introduced the seeds of what I think is going to be the backstory or the mythology for this whole Defenders series of shows.
I kept waiting for the hand to show up. I was like, are that going to be them? And they never did.
Well, Nobu is kind of. I mean, he had the red ninja outfit on. I think that's
I mean, like, I kept waiting for a scene where, like, they'd pull back and you'd just see 40 ninjas hanging out in all the shadows.
Sure. Right.
Well, they were there. They were just in the shadows.
Yeah, no, they're excellent ninjas. I mean, obviously, but. And obviously, there's time for that later. That wasn't really the story in that.
Well,
totally
it seems from the guy at the end of the Steck episode, Madame Gao saying, I'm going home. It's not China. It's much further away. And then the fact that they wanted this very specific building in a specific point to develop, that we are heading towards Kunlun and the Hand and
Shadowland
and Shadow, like all that sort of mystical kung fu stuff is where I feel like Defenders is going in 6 years or whenever, however old we're going to be at the time that comes out. But
far too old to care about this with any real conclusion.
Right.
So that's interesting. I like that was seeded a few times, but wasn't. This very much lives on its own. It's not like some of the complaints we have about the movies are always pointing forward to the detriment of the actual story being told. Whereas this was a story that was told.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So what else? What else did we like?
Well, I'm just curious what you guys thought about casting, but we can continue to talk about
casting. To me is probably the thing that I came away with the most impressed with.
They do it so well, Marvel Studios.
We haven't really gone into like our overall feeling on the whole thing, but if you would ask me sort of the number one impressive thing about it, it was the casting. I thought you were talking about Charlie Cox and Matt, and I think that worked out really well. I thought that Karen, and I keep wanting to say Deborah Jo, but it might be Deborah Ann. Anne, Vampire Girl. She, like, I really liked the development of her character over the. I didn't like her at first. I was like, I know she's weird in this role. It didn't work for me. And then as time went on, and it's almost like the actress got more confident, but as the character sort of got her feet more under her, I thought she was much more compelling at the end.
Absolutely.
In the beginning, which was a thing you don't see all that often. Again, in these movies, everybody's sort of fully formed and you go. But for me, like, my favorite character and my favorite actor, while I was very impressed by Wilson Fisk's head, was Ben Urich. And
by far.
I don't even – it's not even a thing that – yes, he's a black actor who had played a traditionally white character. It didn't matter. That dude was Ben Urich. His shirt looked like him. His posture looked like him. He just looked that wearied hunch, and I was so mad about what happened to him.
Were you devastated when he died?
Yes!
I was shocked. I couldn't believe it.
He's supposed to be there. He's supposed to be the Confederate along the whole way. This is bullshit.
I kept waiting for Daredevil to go through the window at the very last moment, but when they didn't, I'm like, okay, I guess this is it. I guess this is where we're going.
I think this is where things get messy in terms of from what we know from knowing people inside, this was never meant to go beyond this season. So I think they were sort of telling their complete Daredevil story, which allowed them to do things like kill off Ben Urich and kill off the Owl. But it was so insanely popular that they've now announced a season two. And that's where I think they may come to regret some of these decisions they made in this season.
Well, yeah. So I think we're all in agreement about Ben Urich.
He was amazing.
Yeah, totally. Even though he was the jerk guy from The Sopranos.
He was amazing.
Yeah, no, he was really wonderful, and
he just stood there, and the story was told.
You could not watch him.
I'm curious about Foggy because Foggy tends to be very polarizing. A friend of me and Mike's really hates the actor and the portrayal of Foggy.
I skirted on that line at first. I thought I made a joke to myself, and before I tweeted it, I checked. I was like, well, it looks like Matt's about 20 years older than Foggy, and then I looked. Foggy's 6 years older than the actors, he just looks young. Foggy's closer to my age, and Charlie Cox is barely 30.
Wow.
So that's interesting
and depressing.
I don't know that he was wrong, but I didn't love him. But I've never loved Foggy as a character.
See, I like Foggy as a character, but keep going.
But there was a certain jauntiness and jocularity to his dialogue, which could on one hand be served as a counterpoint to everything else that was going on, but on the one hand, it was like Joss Whedon being taken a bit too far.
Right.
Mm-hmm. With sort of clever, quirky dialogue. And
He skirted that edge.
I also hate his hair.
The hair I thought was a major misstep, right? Because you just can't take a guy seriously like that. I wouldn't hire a lawyer with hair like that, and I had hair like that in college. But the thing is, I felt like a lot of his lines just felt like he was looking for approval. I felt like the actor was actually out of his league, and that's a terrible thing to say. But I never felt like he was as grounded as everyone else around him, and that might have been it. Might have been the dialogue. It might have been that's why that extra bounce was there, because he's like, I'm gonna be sort of the comedy, but Foggy's not the comedy. Foggy's just trying to get this fucking law firm off the ground. And
that's a really good point.
His best, I mean, it's not his best scene, but he had a good scene where he told the girl off in the lobby.
Yes.
I didn't find it believable at all that they would end up together later on, but at least you saw him be grounded. But even then, there was a brightness to it that was distracting. And it's hard because it's not fair to criticize really, but I mean, it was interesting that the directors let him go in that direction, because I get it being a counterpoint, but Foggy is not, I don't think at the end of the day, a counterpoint to Daredevil.
They turned him into the typical quote unquote chubby nerdy friend.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's a very familiar character to all of us who have ever watched anything.
Right.
But it was a little too much just that generic nerdy chubby friend.
He just wasn't stressed out enough. And maybe it's just because I've been under a lot of stress.
Really?
But I just didn't feel like he was – I didn't get the sense of the law firm growing or doing anything.
He's supposed to be as good as Matt.
Yes.
He is.
And he wasn't. Like he was – it was like he was getting pulled along. Like,
well, that's
thank
the
God
one thing
Matt's
that was short shifted a bit was that they really only had that one courtroom scene.
And I love that aspect to the
– There need to be more of that.
You know, I agree completely, because part of the great part about Daredevil is, like, at night, yes, he's fighting crime, but during the day he's also doing the same thing, but in a completely different arena. He's still using his powers in a completely different kind of way, and it shows just how almost one note Matt Murdock is, like, well, how funny, obsessive he is.
It's funny, in the show it feels like they kind of made the decision, like, it really wouldn't be impossible for, it wouldn't be possible for him to do both of these things, so we're going to just have him not show up at the office, because that was basically the explanation. It's like the old Spider-Man thing, where we're always like, how does he do three jobs and be Spider-Man? And the comics were like, just go with it. The show was like, fuck that, he's just not going to go to work.
That's right.
so let's talk about his powers then. One of the things the show did was, it didn't really get into the whole radar sense. We only got really one shot from Matt's point of view, in which he's explaining his powers to the night nurse. But otherwise, it was kept sort of like you had to just sort of infer what his powers were. What did you think of that decision?
I noticed, because obviously right away in Mark Waid's current run, that was the thing that we were shown according to their point of view, with that sort of pink and black grid.
Right, the iconography
is
very strong.
And then right away in, I think, the Daredevil movie, they took care of that early on too. But in this, I don't know, I liked those other things when they happened, but I also like the choice of just leaving it sort of vague.
Yes.
I thought that worked.
When I first read Daredevil as a kid, it was during an arc where he didn't have his radar. So it fit kind of with that, my first encounter with him. And I thought the World on Fire episode was actually a really good episode, and I loved the way they described it. And I'm so thrilled that they only showed it once. Mm-hmm. And then that was it. And look, you know, if you're going to watch episode 10, you're going to have watched episode 3 or whatever that episode was. So there's no reason to keep going in over it. Then it becomes too much like the Bionic Woman with her ear, you know, or the eye or something, where they're like, time to use the power now. It was just more like, you got it. We know what he feels like. Yes, you know, leave the audience wanting more. I think it would have been distracting if they kept going back to radar view.
I think that that's a benefit of having had 15 years of superhero exposure in the mainstream. We don't have to explain all that stuff all the time. People are totally cool with going with it. And that's a benefit, I guess.
So much more savvy audience. That's right. Mm.
No, well, I also think it's partially what Mike said, is that with this particular distribution model, you're going to be in for the long run,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to being on TV where you might miss an episode or here and there.
Yeah, but also, like, it's just not as impressive anymore to be like, he has superpowers. Like, right. All these other characters have superpowers. It's not the point. Never was.
I think if we're going to talk about powers, we should talk about, you know, the fight scenes, and
right.
and what's wonderful is, like, this is truly a street level character. Now you if people didn't know what that phrase was, you can say, you know, street level, you know, like that Daredevil show, where, you know, where it's gritty. Some of the and they really started these fights off right off the bat. We keep talking about the end of the second episode, the one that threw out the hallway, but so many different kinds of battles that really, where you're just looking with your head held in your hands going, ow, ow.
I liked
the Nova fight. Amazing.
I liked that that Daredevil was a boxer, mm-hmm. and yeah. not a ninja. I noticed that. And
right.
and the reason I noticed
a lot
that
of punching.
Is because if you watch, I remember this from when I was watching, like, Batman Begins documentaries, and they talk about how they chose a fighting style for him, and it was that whatever that
Krav Maga, I don't know.
Yeah, there you go. That. And so, like, I'm kind of attuned to look for it, and I was like, oh, he's not being a ninja, he's being a brawler, which totally makes sense.
Yeah.
In that sense. And then at the same time, then when Fisk fights with him, like, he had his own kind of thing going on,
which
I thought was neat.
What I liked about it was that, and this was very apparent in that very famous second episode fight scene, and whoever choreographed these fights should win awards for choreographing fights. If those things exist. If they don't exist, they should get a special Emmy. But what I liked about it was he didn't come out at the end like, okay, now off to the next thing. Like, he was fucking exhausted from all
yeah.
these fights.
Yeah.
And in the middle of the long fights, he would get tired, and everybody would get tired. They'd all sort of stop for a second and catch their breath, because they're not superhuman. So I like that sort of realism, as real as you can get in this ridiculous scenario, is that these things are really physically taxing.
And what's also – what was fun too was even though he's got this brawl and these punches, you really felt these punches. There were some really incredible spins and kicks. Yeah. There's this one where he's running after the car to see where the heroin factory is. There's this one time where he jumps across the building and then flips in the middle of the air so he can do a barrel roll out of it. I watched that three times. It was so awesome. And there were a couple of times where in the middle of a fight, he would just add an extra – twist to get more momentum behind a kick or something. So even though, you know, by the end of this series, you've gotten used to seeing a lot of fight scenes, there were still little things here and there that he would, Daredevil or one of his opponents would have to use to get the upper hand that you may have not seen before, which I thought was really effective. And then finally, just the sheer sense of power of what happens when the Kingpin decides to hit you was really, really kind of incredible. Just if he had both of his fists up, you were like, I can't watch the next scene because he's gonna destroy this poor person. So I thought they talked about agility. They showed agility, speed, and power in a variety of ways that was really compelling.
So now let's discuss the costume.
Connor, why don't you start? We've been talking a ton. What do you think of it? Which costume?
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of interesting things going on here. So, of course, when this series was first announced, they showed the costume that you see in 99% of the series, which is the black costume taken directly from the comics, but everyone complained about it.
From the Hulk special.
not exactly. It's closer to the comics, but yes, from the Trial of the Incredible Hulk starring Bill Bixby. As we discussed earlier, this is his journey. So about halfway through, he gets the sticks, the weapons, and then he gets the holder for the sticks on his legs. So that's a little bit closer to his costume. And then by the end of it, he has gotten his full-on red costume with a little bit of armor because he's getting sliced up, especially in the Nobu fight. And it was funny. I made such a concerted effort to not see the costume.
Totally.
Which is the cover, by the way, of the show.
Well, that's what I'm about to get to. So I'm watching this on Saturday after it's released, and I've made a concerted effort to ignore everything. And I get to the last episode, and the cover on the show changes from Matt Murdock to Daredevil. And I went, well, there it is. I literally had no choice in the matter.
It's not a good shot of him either, the way it
looks. No, so I really liked the black outfit.
Mm-hmm. Really?
I liked it a lot. I thought the mask was really interesting and cool, and I thought the silhouette was awesome. He looked imposing. Mm-hmm. I took a long time with the red costume. I think I've come around on it, but at first I did not like it at all.
See, I didn't really like the black costume. I totally understood the reason for it, but I knew it was temporary. I actually hadn't seen the other costume. I knew it was temporary so I was fine when they switched. I'm surprised it took so long to switch to it. They were like, it was at the very end, here it is. Because the whole time I was thinking, he's going to get his ass kicked in that thing, which is what happened. And also, like, I mean, there is an aesthetic to Marvel, even DC, really, superhero costumes where they've got some armor to them. They have some body. They're not spandex. And so I guess that just makes sense.
Like, this is why I liked it, because it was so different. I thought I kept picturing him in the room with the Avengers thinking how off he would look, and that would really work for his character.
I think that will work better for Iron Fist.
Yeah, I was just thinking of Iron Fist. That costume obviously reminded me a lot of Iron Fist.
Because Iron Fist is going to be super high-level martial arts and zen and all that stuff, and he won't let himself get hit so that he'll want to keep himself light. That makes sense. But because of how they had made Matt Murdock into a kind of fighter, it didn't make sense.
So
but I like how they got there.
By the end. When I first saw it, I was like, oh. And I thought the mask is a little off. Mm-hmm. It makes the shape of his head weird. And I don't know why.
But that's all of them. I mean, that's Captain America. That's whatever.
I don't think it's as bad. Captain America is not so bad. It's just, it sort of squishes the area above his nose. I can't even be able to figure it out because I haven't looked at it enough. But I have come around and I've looked at some still images of it, movie stills. And I do like it now, so that's where I'm at with it.
I kept waiting for whatever the piece of equipment that is the sticks connected with the rope.
Right.
Yeah.
That one, I was like, when is that one going to come out?
I thought that was going to be the last shot.
Totally.
I was going to fling that and swing. I was like, yeah. The bolo. Is it the bolt? That's the word in my head. I don't know why.
Well, the thing about his sticks, they're magical. Though. Sometimes they connect by a rope and sometimes they don't. It's whatever you need in the story at that moment.
Well, you lock him in.
Yeah.
But I liked it by the end. Oh,
And we did get bouncing stick action.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. I love that. I love that the same way that I love bouncing shield action, and why Captain America's stupid magnetic arm is the dumbest thing ever. I'd rather disbelieve that he's that good at throwing and catching with the straps than there's some technological implement there. And that goes double for Daredevil, by the way, because he doesn't have Tony Stark.
So now what did we not like about this? It's tougher.
It's tougher.
It's not tougher for me. I don't put it as a specific thing, but I will say I wasn't terribly compelled to keep watching it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Because on the one hand, I was forced to keep watching it because we were trying to do this thing and get it. So it was like, for me, it was a little like going to work. It was just like, all right, they're going to punch each other for a while. And I totally would phase out during long punching scenes. Like, I just would. It's not my thing. It is for a little while, but there was a lot of it. A
lot of it.
And you know, like, I kept going back to the idea that it's really well done, and there's all sorts of things that, like, everything I've said about it, I absolutely believe. But at the end of the day, it is just an adaptation of something that already existed that was really good, and ultimately it may have felt a little bit pointless in that, unless you really like seeing in live action, which isn't a thing that I need. Hmm. Which is very similar to why I don't really watch the animated specials that they have. So that's not really an overall criticism. It's just sort of it's a taste thing, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're not really into the movies and the TV shows.
Fun.
In the same way. I think they're kind of cool, but at this point, like, the novelty of them has, like, I can't believe this. I can totally believe there's all these things now because that has been reality for a long time. So, like, it was good. It was really well done. It was better than, say, something like Watchmen that was so exact there was no point. But it was also really long, and I found myself thinking, and this has to do with the model, like, I think I would have been happier if they released them, like, one at a time, and then we could all experience them in the chunks they were in more together, which is a fun part of it. But having, like, everybody watch all of it right at once, while some people couldn't watch all of it, like, it spreads out the sort of group experience, which I like. It's one of the reasons I like issues of comic books. It's one of the reasons I like doing our regular comic book podcast, because if we were all reading trades, we would never be on the same page.
Right.
Literally. So I think there's something cool to actually having stuff be released a little more separated than here it all is.
Right.
But that's not for everybody, obviously.
I think there was a little bit of dragging toward the last three or four episodes where I felt like I wanted to tighten it up a bit. I kind of felt like I knew where things were going. I mean, there was a really nice reversal at the very, very end. But I just felt there were some scenes that, Okay. I don't necessarily need to walk down this hallway that long or have this conversation be that long. I just felt like not every episode needed to be an hour. You know, I think you could have done this in 12 hours, even 10. And that I think might have given a little bit more sense of urgency to everything. I just think 13 might have been too long. And I really enjoyed it. I quite enjoyed it. But, you know, I kind of had the same feeling with Josh. It's like, man, maybe I'm not really ready to watch the next episode because I kind of know where it's going.
Three or four, I was like, there's fucking 10 more of these? Like,
yeah, right.
You know, because, and you know, it's like, so maybe spreading it out, I think I would have enjoyed it more in that respect.
Yeah, I can say that for you. I mean, I loved it.
Yeah,
I stayed up till almost 3 in the morning on Saturday to finish it because I couldn't stop watching it. I like that they were able to revel in it. I mean, this is the format.
Yeah,
and they're gonna have 13 hours. Might as well take them and do stuff you can't normally do. I mean, there were little things here and there, like when Wilson Fisk, they're about to expose him, right? So there was that great scene where Ben Yurick is writing the copy about Wilson Fisk, and I really liked the writing. I liked him in that scene, and then he goes on TV. Wilson Fisk goes on TV and exposes himself, and I kind of made a face because who is he? Like, why is everyone covering this press conference? Like, no one knows who he is.
Right,
but it was just little things like that. Like I pushed through it because everything else was so weird. I think the only downside I mentioned earlier was in thinking they only had these 13 episodes. I think they may have squished in too much.
I think that we were shortchanged some Rosario Dawson.
Yes.
Yeah, she, I felt like she had to leave for another project right in the middle of it.
Yep, exactly. I'm not for, and I will always take more Rosario Dawson, even if she's just a trained bureaucrat.
Do you remember when we met her briefly at HeroesCon?
Oh, God, I forgot about that. But that does not detract from what I said in any way just now. It only enhanced it. I just went, oh, yeah. Because she was like into comic books for a little while.
Yeah.
And she showed up at all the shows. I forgot about that. Maybe that's why I love her so. no, but I really like her. And it, like, I was like, oh, that's Rosario Dawson. And I thought they had an interesting relationship. But I also think that when they kind of, like, oh, they've done everything they were going to do. She's not going to date him.
Right.
You know. But she sort of just disappeared, which was weird.
Yeah.
But also, I'm glad they didn't stretch it out to 13 episodes for no reason.
True.
Yep. That was a thought I had.
I felt like could have, if they had thought they were going, or known they were going to do two seasons or more, or whatever, they could have maybe taken some of these characters and having them show up in the second season. Not, you know, not stuff it all in. And I think killing Ben Urich was a big mistake. As great as that confrontation in their room was, which I thought was one of the best scenes in the whole show, when he turned the lights on and there's Wilson Fisk sitting in your chair, which, by the way, you just, at that point, you just get up and run.
You're dead.
Well, you have to, you poop.
Yeah, you poop, then run, and then die.
You know what, though? Like, I didn't think that was going to happen. I thought.
I totally
did
not.
If you don't kill him, I mean, that's always there then. He can get me whenever. He's always there. I'm not safe. And I get why, you know, they ended that guy's story. It kind of works either way, because then it makes Wilson Fisk into, oh, like, he's not screwing around.
I just feel like people should just turn on the lights more. I just, maybe.
We have clappers.
Let's turn them on. It's Daredevil's, Matt's the only one who's blind. Everybody else, turn those lights on. It's okay.
It's an energy crisis, Mike. Everyone's conserving. Everyone's doing their part.
It's sort of somewhat related, I guess. I don't know. Like, what did you guys think of the role of New York in this? Like, part of me, they kept talking about Hell's Kitchen. But
it's a little tough.
I just didn't, in a weird way, I didn't. It didn't feel as quote unquote New York as maybe say a Spider-Man.
It's funny because they shot it in New York.
Right. You know what they did, and I kept looking at it going, that doesn't look like New York. Which is, and then every once in a while I would think to myself, and I would about to be say, I say snarky things to myself. Well, that's not New York, and they'd pull back and go, oh, it is.
Oh, it is New York.
But a lot of times it didn't look like it for whatever reason. Like the outside, a lot of their exterior shots were super bright,
right?
Really brightly lit, like them standing on the dayline. It didn't look like New York, which is wrong, weird, but. I noticed that.
Well, the fetishing of Hell's Kitchen is a totally thing from the comics. I mean, I think it's on every page of every Daredevil comic, at least until he moved to San Francisco. But I thought it worked. It felt very different from all the other productions that Marvel's done. It didn't feel like it. And also, you know, it looked great. I thought the way it was shot and the cinematography, the color palette was great. I thought it was really fun to look at. I really like this a lot.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
They're setting a high bar for themselves because you're gonna get into the more strange or Iron Fisty stuff, and you're gonna wonder if the people are gonna come along for that ride.
Yeah, but I think that makes sense because this is the thing. It's like Iron Man.
Right.
Like once they made everybody like Iron Man, they were in for everything else, even if it was which it wasn't very different. But I don't know.
I find myself wondering, and this is totally just because it's nothing to do with the show itself. Like. I guess they didn't close the Spider-Man deal in time to make it the Daily Bugle. All right.
That doesn't bother me, at least. I think, see, for me, I'm looking forward to stuff more that I haven't seen a million times. Like, I've only read a handful of Iron Fist or Luke Cage in my life. I've seen whatever the Daredevil story is, I've seen it. You know, like, so I think that'll be fun, but I'm not your typical audience, so it's hard to say.
So you're going to have a real problem with the Jessica Jones story.
Why?
Because it sounds like it's going to be directly the Bendis stuff. I mean,
the
Purple Man.
But even that has only been told once. You know, we've had there are reboots on Matt Murdock all the time,
true.
Where we sort of, you know, Bendis was just his longer, different version of Frank Miller's thing, which was just a different version of you know the earliest version. So, I don't know. That doesn't bother me so much. I also haven't read that, and I read that once. 10, 15 years.
Mike,
ago.
I really hope there's a character called Miller in that.
Yeah, totally
Miller. Right.
You think he should be a security guard maybe in a cameo?
No, there's the actor playing the Purple Man is in Broadchurch and he's constantly shouting.
Oh, you're right, he is.
I guess one thing that when I was thinking about the podcast that we haven't talked about, we'll wrap this up. But I love the notion of Murdoch as this sort of lapsed Catholic. Trying to find solace in this church. I know that was a big thing in the Miller books, and it was just sort of interesting seeing this guy turn to his childhood religion at certain times and watching this priest. I actually really liked all of those scenes. Maybe it's because I grew up that way, but it was one of the few times that you got to see Murdoch at rest, right. And not there was a sort of confessional just. Almost meditative aspect to him just stopping for a second and just talking to this priest. I thought those scenes were actually kind of cool.
Yeah, I thought they hit all the aspects of Daredevil that you wanted to hit. I mean, it was, if anything, they shortchanged the law stuff, but also that could be explained away that they don't have any clients because they don't really have a practice.
It's true.
Yet.
And you can't do everything. They did a lot, you know, but you can't do everything.
And I like Karen has a secret. You know, that was a great scene. I like that she's going to be dealing with that for a while and that she doesn't admit it. So the series doesn't wrap up in a nice, tidy little bow.
I like that Wesley character.
Yeah.
He was a good character. I thought this was well done. This was extremely well done. And everyone's talking about it. It's interesting to see how pervasive it was in the culture. It was not just in the
comics
culture.
Know.
It was outside. It was in every magazine. It was everywhere. Seems to be really popular.
There was a brief period there. Like I was not happy about the timing of it, I suppose. Where I was like, there was that show, and then at the same time that Game of Thrones came back.
Oh, it was Game of Thrones, Mad Men, and Daredevil Weekend. That was,
and Justified was ending. Like it was, and I had just gotten back from like being on the road for 2 weeks and being on a vacation. And I was like, I this is too much.
at the end of the day, though, it featured Dominic Lombardozzi, and you can't fault anything featuring Dominic Lombardozzi.
Herc.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree. Or the guy with the cell phone from Oz, if you really want to go back.
Wow.
Ralph the Plumber. If any character appeared in Oz first, and there were a lot of them in this because New York actors,
yeah.
Yeah. Then they're always going to be that character. Like J. Jonah Jameson, that's Schillinger.
So,
and lastly, one shout out. I thought the credit sequence was really cool. And,
yes,
and if anything showed how Daredevil looks at New York, it might be the credit sequence and how his radar works.
I actually kept watching it.
Blood everywhere.
I was really fascinated by it. I kept watching it all throughout that really long Saturday. You're right. No, I had some fucked up dreams after that, though. Like, I went to bed at 3 a.m. and I was like, I don't know what's happening in my head right now, but it's really
punching.
Violent. It was just so much punching.
So much punching.
But I enjoyed it. I'm really looking forward to, I mean, I was looking forward to them before, but now I'm really looking forward to AKA Jessica Jones, which is the next one.
When is it?
Now that is...
Next year.
Netflix?
Netflix.
That is Netflix. That was going to be ABC at one point, though, right?
Right, it was. And now, so next year, 2016, we got Jessica Jones, 2017, we got Luke Cage, 2018... Iron Fist 2019, Defenders.
Even a better, exactly, but even a better reason, though, to maybe spread out the release.
Right.
Because it's like everybody's eating all their cookies right away, and you don't get any more cookies for a year.
Right.
And that's, I don't know, that seems,
it's gonna,
we're going
to
be.
People were freaking, a lot of people didn't know that. I saw people like freaking out. When am I going to see the next one? Well, you get to wait 12 months.
Yeah.
And then by the time the Defenders comes out, they're going to have a wig for Charlie Cox.
It's not like when a season of Game of Thrones comes out once a year, we're all like, ugh, I wish those came out faster.
Well.
Because that's not as fun. And you get to all experience. I mean, one of the things about these episodes, I think, is that they didn't necessarily have cliffhangers at the end of them because there was no reason for it.
Right, because they're not designed that way.
Yeah, and I like that. I like, if you're going to do issues, which is what these are in my mind, you know,
well, this was a trade release. This was a
an
OGN.
But a trade release is usually comprised of a bunch of issues.
No, but this is an OGN.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
It totally was. I mean, it's just a different formatting style. Like it's a super, super long movie.
Yeah.
And it,
which
it,
is weird. Yeah. That's not a thing that existed, really.
Mm-mm. No, you're going to start getting used to that.
That's a new thing.
It's kind of like House of Cards. House of Cards doesn't really have
House of Cards. I mean, The Wire was like that. The Wire wasn't like it. And that people. That's one of the reasons that they always say, you know, you want to watch The Wire, you have to go for the first 4 or 5 episodes, or you're not gonna get into it because it's done like a novel,
mm-hmm.
And so there weren't cliffhangers. That wasn't how it was done. These were chapters in a book, and people were so not used to that they just stopped watching it right away. I did that. I love it as a format, though. So.
It's just interesting, the older you get, the more you start reverting back to the classics. It's happening with you.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
Well, I think even with Josh's reservations, we all enjoyed it quite a bit.
Yeah, I don't have anything to complain.
No, I mean, it's a, you know what? It's just really nice not to be disappointed. So.
You bleed?
Oh, Jesus. So if you want to talk about the Daredevil TV show, you can go to ifanboy.com. There'll be a post for this show. You can tell us what you thought of the show, the ups and downs, all the things going on. There's a lot happening in 13 episodes, a lot to talk about. That's all happening at ifanboy.com. There you can also find our other special edition shows in which we talk about the movies and the things that come out. So the next one will be Avengers in a couple of weeks. We just did one on Batman versus Robin, the animated movie that came out recently on Blu-ray and DVD. So those all come out on iFanboy.com, as well as our weekly Pick a Leak podcast that Josh and I host. We talk about the week's books. You can always find those things at iFanboy.com. Thanks, guys, for doing the show. Thanks for making it through this very long and violent 13 episodes. I know it was difficult, but everyone appreciates it. Now people can stop asking us when the show's coming out.
Yeah, I hope you enjoyed it. But see you soon, I guess.
So until next time, I'm Connor.
I'm Josh.
And I'm Mike.
Did you go away, Josh?
Yeah, a little bit.
He withdrew. He's got to go back into the shadows.
I leaned back. Okay.
Are you a member of the hand?
I think you've seen me move, and I think you know the answer to that.
The most out-of-shape hand member of all time.
Okay, let's not go with most.
Of all the hand?
In the clearing stands a boxer and a fighter. By his trained and he carries the reminders of every glove that laid him down or cut him till he cried out in his anger and his shame. I am leaving, I am leaving, but the fighter still remains.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.